Tuesday, June 14th. Committee, we're going to open the work session on House Bill 3120. And I'm going to ask Ray Wilkerson and Christina McNitt to come forward, please. They have asked to address the committee in regards to our force, the impact, and I thought their opinions would be interesting to the committee. So, Ray, good afternoon. Christina, good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We very much appreciate your willingness to give us a few minutes on your agenda. There's been very little discussion of how Measure 37 and or any bills to amend Measure 37 would affect forest land, so I thought we thought we'd give you just a couple of insights onto that on that subject. I'd like to specifically mention two issues. One is the Oregon Forest Practices Act that regulates our activities. We both represent private forest landowners. Generally, the terminology is industrial, non-industrial, which is a euphemism for large landowners and small landowners, and the usual definition makes a break around 5,000 acres. So I represent people that own more than 5,000 acres of forest land, private forest land. Christina represents those who own less than 5,000 acres, but our interests are fairly aligned. Our activities are regulated by the Forest Practices Act on private forest land. Measure 37, as enacted, would allow private forest landowners to file a claim for the cost of complying with the rules under the Forest Practices Act. The Department of Forestry estimates that the total cost of those rules annually to forest landowners is around $50 million a year. That's the value of the timber that we have to leave behind to comply with the Forest Practices Act annually. So it's a substantial regulatory act. And the bill that's before you, and we've been operating off the June 8th document like you have for the last several days, along with the rest of the amendments that I've seen and Senate Bill 1037, all of those would eliminate our ability to file a Measure 37 claim under the Forest Practices Act for rules that are currently on the books. If the rules that are enacted in the future, you could, but not for current rules. We don't oppose those rules necessarily. Our members, we're not complaining that the regulatory burden is too high. But frankly, Mr. Chairman, we're not willing to give that up under Measure 37 for free, for lack of a better term. And we've had a number of discussions with our board about, you know, if you're willing to give that up, what could we, you know, what benefit might we get? And clearly, we are concerned about the transferability of waivers like everybody else is, all the rest of the landowners. And I'm not suggesting this is a politically realistic idea, but our board did discuss this at length last week, and they would be willing to give up retroactive claims under the Forest Practices Act if they could get a clear ability to transfer waivers that they get in the future. And the other issue that's important to them is this owner's chain of title issue, which is there's a lot of confusion about if there's a change in the legal structure from a partnership to a limited liability corporation or a trust or something. It's just the same people still involved, whether that's a chain of ownership that breaks in Measure 37, and that they would want that clarified too. Again, that was what came out of our board meeting last week, but I think if the only thing the bill does to affect forestry is eliminate our ability to file claims under Measure 37 for everything that's on the books right now, we wouldn't be able to support the bill.
And which portion is that?
Right? Well, you'd have to, Mr. Chairman, you've got to string together about three or four subsections here, but it's there. I checked it again, and it's. I could discuss it with your staff later, and if you wanted to change the future versions to eliminate that effect, we could certainly point out the roadmap on how to do that.
Okay.
And finally, if I could mention one other thing that affects forest land that's in the bill, in this bill, and Representative Smith was well aware of this, because the only court case so far on Measure 37 has been related to the Columbia River Gorge, and the court in that case ruled that a claim was not allowed because it was the rules are required by federal law, the Federal Columbia Gorge Act. And there is a provision in Measure 37 that says if the rule is required by federal law, you don't have a Measure 37 claim. This bill and other versions of the amendments expand that exemption. They redefine federal law in a way that would allow more things to fit under the exemption, which limits the applicability of Measure 37 as a result. So we would not support that also because, it would be easier for future regulatory bodies to basically shoehorn everything they wanted into something that they could say has some nexus to federal law and say you don't have a Measure 37 claim. So those are just two examples of things that are in this bill that affect forest land that we wanted to bring to your attention, and I appreciate the time.
I'm glad you did. And you will forward to the committee as soon as possible a list of the areas in this -3 amendment that involves our discussion today.
Yes, sir.
Because that would be very valuable to us as a committee as we proceed.
Okay. We will do it. Thank you. We'll definitely do it.
Any questions from the committee? From Mr. Wilkerson? Okay. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Christina, did you have something that you wanted to add? I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I'll just put on the record my name, Christina McNitt, for the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, and my organization concurs with the comments that Mr. Wilkerson just laid out, and just want to communicate with you. It's been a little awkward following this hearing, and we were feeling uncomfortable not communicating with the committee, but we do have some concerns about the sections that Ray mentioned.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand, obviously, that you, like the agricultural community, the farmers, don't like to have people all through your area of operation, but there was a suggestion that there could be clustering of homes in areas that might fit into maybe the small woodlots and possibly around the edges of the larger tracts. Is that at all workable for you?
Representative Anderson, let me give you a real-life example by way of answering that question. We have a member of OFIC who owns 200 acres of forest land in Multnomah County right off of Skyline Road, just north of Forest Park. It's in Multnomah County, just outside the city limits, and I believe just outside the urban growth boundary. But it is zoned for forestry. He's trying to manage it as a commercial forest tract. There's houses all around it. So things like pesticide applications and that sort of thing are very problematic in that kind of an environment. It's 200 acres. As a result of Measure 37, he's probably going to look real hard at developing that land. Not because he wants to be a developer instead of a forester, but just because of the location makes it impractical to continue to manage that land as forest land. But the clustering idea wouldn't really work there. You know, you'd have 20 acres out of 200 that you could put 10 houses on, for an example, but you still have 180 acres of forest land left over that would be, continue to be very, very difficult to manage for forest land. So that's why that sort of thing, it just, our board wasn't very enthusiastic about it.
Chair Burrard, Representative Anderson, on a smaller scale, the Oregon Small Woodlands Association has similar concerns, believe it or not. We actually had a bill introduced this last session and for a number of sessions trying to establish the idea of setting up a caretaker dwelling, because we're very interested in keeping the forest land base in a forest land base. But we recognize that, you know, the landscape has shifted literally with the passage of ballot measure 37. In some ways, that caretaker dwelling could be perceived as limiting what measure 37 brought forward. And so we've been in an awkward position even pursuing that. But our considerations were that a forest land parcel had to be 40 acres or more on the west side. The thinking behind that is because that's an economic unit. It really is a functioning forest land base. And that we had a bunch of criteria on those dwellings that were cited in those locations, primarily being that that dwelling is, and the forest property is in a Forest Land Protective Association. So the trees have fire protection. The home needs to be in a rural fire protection district, so the house has protection. The house is built to forest fire standards. There's a right to farm and forest restrictions, so neighbors can continue to operate and do their business. We have similar concerns that once you start building homes, because people like to live among trees, that then maybe you forget why the trees are there or how some people are managing them. But again, we didn't necessarily want to bring that forward because in some ways that constricts what Measure 37 has brought forward by the voters, and so it's a complicated situation even for our membership. But just suffice it to say we have some concerns, and I guess from a landowner perspective, if it adds to your deliberations, if you in the end decide to just let Measure 37 kind of play out, we would not be opposed to that effort.
Okay. Thank you, Reverend.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Ackerman.
Yes, it might be easier for me to have you tell us what sections or pages in the draft we're working on, the replace -3 amendments, would impact the forest industry as you described. I'm trying to read through it, and maybe you could just short-circuit my research.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I think I can do that fairly quickly. On the bottom, on this June 8th document, on the bottom of page 6, is the expanded definition of the federal exemption. There's little c. Okay. It says, to the extent the land use regulation is required to comply with or conform to, those are new words, federal law, or for permits issued pursuant to federal law or consent decrees based on federal law. Those are all additional words that are not in Measure 37. Measure 37 just says if it's required by federal law, you can't file a Measure 37 claim. So, conform.
Keep that again, Ray, because it's
the bottom of it. The bottom of page 6 on this document.
This is in
one that says C8. Yes, yeah. The little C. Okay. Right. That's how the federal exemption would be redefined under this version of House Bill 3120. And there's a number of additional words added, which our attorneys say expands the exemption, which then restricts Measure 37 as a result, because there would be more examples of things that would be exempt, and therefore you wouldn't be able to file a Measure 37 claim. Representative Ackerman, also on page 6, on section 4, sub B, 4.1 sub B, about the middle of that page, you can file a claim for a regulation enacted prior to the effective date. And then there's a number of caveats, and then that links into Section 18, which I understand the committee is going to maybe jettison anyway, but currently the way Section 18 is written, it would not apply to a regulation of forest land under the Forest Practices Act. So
we presently have that sentence question marked that begins with meets the applicable criteria contained in either 14 or 18.
Right.
That's presently highlighted to maybe come out of it.
Right. I understand that from yesterday, and if it did, that would take care of the problem there. Let's assume it wasn't replaced by something else that had the same effect.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, in order to get the scope of what we're talking about, we do recognize on page 5 that the State Board of Forestry and its administrative rules with respect to the use of property could restrict forestry uses. Could you give me some example of what you have over there, how forest lands would be restricted and thereby claim relief under Measure 37?
Certainly, Representative Ackerman, the highest cost rule is riparian buffer strips. We are required to leave a strip of trees along all fish-bearing streams. It varies by the width of the stream, but those are fairly extensive rules, and those are private property. Those are private trees. We leave them without compensation. We're not complaining about that. We don't think the rules are unreasonable, but that is the most expensive of the $50 million total cost annually to comply with that law. That's the big ticket item, is the buffer strips along streams for shade and other purposes to protect fish and water quality.
And that's your largest concern under that section? This example is your largest concern economically?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
We have not, Mr. Chairman, one more comment if I may. We have not, I don't believe there's, or Director Shetterly indicated there have been somewhere 1,000 Measure 37 claims filed so far. As far as I know, not a single one's been filed by a member of Oregon Forest Industries Council. So we're not banging on the courtroom door looking to cash in on this, but it's just a matter of being asked to unilaterally give something up under Measure 37, that they're just not comfortable going there.
Director Shetterly, can you come up and join us, please? Not yet. As we go through these, we were wondering if it would be possible if you felt comfortable making a comment about the changes that we're taking a look at.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Wayne Shetterly, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. I think I will take a page out of Dave Honeycutt's playbook, at least as this is in flux. The governor's staff, I briefed them yesterday on discussions in the
committee and the direction that these amendments are going. And I think at this point, the inclination would be I'll certainly be happy to answer any discrete questions about particular provisions. I'm not going to be in a position to say yes or no on any particular, because it really depends on what the package is going to look like. So if I may ask for that indulgence, Mr. Chair, but certainly if you have questions about particular sections of the bill, I'd be happy to provide information or help you interpret or give some feedback.
Very good. Now, Representative Greenberg.
Thank you, sir. Well, Mr. Wilkerson, I'm sorry I missed your testimony, but how comfortable would your organization be to simply let Measure 37 stand on the words that passed and not try and create any language to implement it?
Representative Greenwick, I would agree with the comment Christina just made on behalf of her organization. They would be fairly comfortable with that.
Just leaving it.
Right. I mean, it's a roll of the dice. Obviously, the courts are going to have to settle a lot of these issues that you folks are trying to settle, and that's a judgment call. But they seem, we had a long conversation about this last week, and that seemed, other than this narrow, if we could just do a simple trade, the Forest Practices Act for transfer of waivers, we'd be fine, but that's probably not politically realistic. So beyond that, they'd just as soon let it go.
Representative Wilson, did you have a question? Any other questions? Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Now you can ask for Glenn.
One thing, Mr. Chair, while Glenn is coming up, the discussion you did have about the federal exemption language, I think we mentioned, signaled yesterday, that language has already been substantially restored. That is, the conform has been taken out in the LC version that you will receive. So that's already been taken care of.
We did not have the Dash 11 amendments yet. Harrison advises me that it will be sometime during this meeting. So I guess it's up to the committee and up to our guests as to whether or not we want to continue going through the Dash 3s at this point when we know that they've been changed.
Mr. Chair, how close are the Dash 11s to the Dash 2s?
I can answer that. The Dash 10s came from Representative Greenwood, and he also had the Dash 9s. The Dash 9s worked off of what were the Dash 1 amendments. We were the committee yesterday deciding that that was a dead amendment and took the liberty to not provide you with that. The changes that Mr. Representative Greenwood would like to highlight in the Dash 10s, and they're profoundly different from the two of them. The Dash 10s work off of the original Dash 3s.
Yeah.
He would wish to draw your attention to one sentence proposed change, and that's found on page 11, I believe it is.
Otherwise, it's the original draft. It's the original Dash 3s. That's what Harrison chose to put in.
I don't know where to go with that at this point.
I don't think you don't need to go with it anywhere.
Okay.
It's just explaining why it's here.
And I can, for those of you, we provided a copy that the work group's working off of. It starts at the top. It's in a WordPerfect document. Proposed amendments to House Bill 3120. It's dated 6-14-05. A couple lines underneath that, LC 2975. It is the significant this is the copy that is right now in LC being edited. I think it's beyond the editing, and I think it's in the copying printing stage. This may be changed, and there may be something coming in during this meeting with a cleaned up copy that will basically delete, it'll go to double spacing, and you'll notice there's a lot of font changes that are in here that you're not normally seeing in an LC dash. However, I've been told that the words are virtually 100%, will be 100% identical to the finished product that we get in perhaps within an hour.
Okay. Many of you are aware that the Senate is now resurrected, Senate Bill 1037, and Sam, just to advise the committee, we understand it was amended again today but did not move out of committee, but you, while we're sitting here for a moment hoping those amendments come, maybe you'd like to review what the direction the Senate is taking with 1037.
I won't pretend to be an expert on what they were doing, because I was, maybe some of you were just watching in, this morning. It was in the Senate Rules Committee. During that time, they did not move it out of committee. They moved four amendments into the Senate bill. They're the dash 8s, 9, 10, and 11. And real briefly, an overview, it will... You may remember and recall that the Senate Bill 1037 originally had distinguished between different types of farmland, forest lands, high-value, non-high-value resource. I believe it eliminates all those sections. With the issue of transferability waivers, it will keep the language in the original ballot measure 37, which then would mean that the significant difference would be waivers would not be transferable, which would then consistent with the Attorney General's opinion. They would retain the compensation process is essentially the same as what we have here. There's a track to record provision. The Senate bill, with one of the amendments, would retain a to determine if there is a diminution in market value. There would be a 10% threshold test. There was some major portion of the Senate bill originally had a number of sections that dealt with the establishment of compensation claims process. That has apparently been eliminated. There is some, with regard to the track to record, there's a provision for relinquishing any rights to for future claims, for any Measure 37 claims under that. If you get a track of record dwelling, you can't also have also a Measure 37 claim, so they clarified that. And then there's some other changes. So it looks like quite a bit of it was deleted from that one, but it has not moved out of committee. They did not, at the end of that meeting, did not indicate when it was going to come back up for a work session, so I do not know when that date may be.
Any discussion by the committee?
Mr. Chair?
Representative.
I don't have any discussion on that, but one suggestion might be that maybe we wait until we get these new amendments before we continue so we can see where we're going. I mean, we're just adding to the discussion.
I think there's... Mr. Chair, if it would assist the committee, the version that Sam just referred to, this 15-page version, which is before coming back from LC, an official copy, I made some marks in the columns on several of the pages to show the committee the sections that have been changed over the past week, however long it's been since we've been talking to the committee. And if it would help, I think they're like somewhere between 5 and 10 of those, and I can simply identify for the committee what, when you see the LC version, sort of a substantive change between the LC version and the June 8th version. What we've been trying to do with this in working with legislative counsel is to provide amendments that dealt with some of the issues that the committee raised where there was consensus. And so this version is sort of the original work group version, but we've been trying to update it with what the committee's been talking about. And so at this point, it's not really the work group's version anymore. It's sort of the work group plus what the committee's been doing. But that would assist. I don't think it would take longer than 5 minutes to do it.
What's the committee's desire?
Mr. Chair, my desire is to wait. We're going to meet tomorrow morning at 8:30. I don't see any reason to... cannot wait. If okay. It comes in, we can call
us. Mr. Chair, I'd be inclined to concur. Mr. Connerly advised us to look at the actual words, and we're not going to move it based on a conceptual description. We're going to have to move an actual amendment. I know Mr. Klein is probably tired of having to come and entertain us, but...
Well, it makes a difference. My son's graduating tomorrow morning, and so I can't be here at 8:30. I can be here at 1:15, but I can't be here at 8:30.
I prefer that it goes to
the dedication to your craft.
Here when he has to stay. He has to leave, we have to leave.
Any other comments?
I just think we're going to do it twice. We're going to end up doing it over again.
Yeah.
What's he incorporated with that?
Ernst.
Hi.
Julie.
Harrison. We don't have a mailbag over your shoulder, so.
Harrison Conley, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I just wanted to reiterate, absolutely I did say ultimately you need to make decisions based on a final LC. This document that Bruin is mentioning is very similar to what the final LC would look like. I think that if you want to consider the policy implications, this is the document to work from now. You know, if you want to wait, that certainly, you know better your schedule and your ability to get additional meetings and that sort of thing. But I don't think you'll go that far wrong by considering this document.
Okay. Thank you, Harrison. Any questions for Harrison? Representative Smith, and either have you changed your mind or you still feel the same way?
Do I still feel the same way?
Me too.
Mr. Chair, you've okay. got the chair in front of your name.
Yeah.
That's right. There's blood there.
5 minutes.
No, that was deference to your position. Your choice. I'll follow your lead.
It was the chair's intent that we can come as close as we possibly can on Friday of having our final draft of our bill completed. We have two meetings scheduled for Thursday, and at this point have one on Friday. That gives us three meetings after today.
Minus Friday.
1:15 on Friday.
We can go as long as we need. Huh?
And we're hoping that we don't have an afternoon session, but I would think that that's probably what we would have to do, is to commit ourselves on Friday to do whatever it takes to finish this product, so because we will have the tools that we need.
Mr. Chair, the later we go on Friday, the less chance it has of getting in and to the floor next week. So I would say if we've got an hour, let's use the hour.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Harrison Conway, if you work from this document and you begin to discuss some particular language, I believe between Glenn and me, we are in a position to say, oh, well, this language has been changed and the words now read. I really think, the changes are that small between this word version and what you will see as the final draft.
Mr. Chair, I don't doubt that they're capable of drafting comments that are made here. What I'm concerned about is the process that still, to me, does not feel like it is providing appropriate weighing and balancing of the puts and takes. And the more puts and the more takes that we talk about, I think the harder it is to find a package that can float through the whole building.
Okay. The chair will recognize the request of Representative Noland, and we will answer Representative
Noland while we have
sure.
a moment on that.
Sure.
Well, we really raised an important issue, and it was raised. What day it is? Yesterday, I guess. And Mr. Honeycutt. There was a package here that the group worked on and came to some consensus on this as a package. We're about to begin to deconstruct this. This is my assumption what's going on. We're going to begin to deconstruct and pick out one from column A and two from column B to put into something that will be our final package. What does that do to the process that you've been carefully working on to craft a balanced response to Measure 37? We heard 17 and 18, we heard recommendations 17 and 18 goes. That was added relative to some other pieces. Where are we in terms of your, what's left of your group, which I guess doesn't include Overrunnings in Action anymore, since Honeycutt stated on the record he wasn't willing to say what he favors and what he opposes anymore. Where are you all on that?
Mr. Chair, that was a good question and a fair one. I would say, first of all, in terms of the work group and the process, like all work groups that
deliberate on issues that are going to take legislation, I think it was understood from the beginning that whatever the work group constructs in the vacuum of outer space would have to survive the reentry of the legislative process. So it was designed really to provide your committee, the Senate, whichever committee, remember, we began this work down on the Senate Bill 1037.
I hope you noticed, Director Shetterly, that there was no door on your capsule.
And no heat shield. we're hoping that there's a parachute at least. In truth, the process is your process. And what we prepared was intended to hand off to you. Clearly, there were negotiations on give and take, puts and takes in the work group process. But I would say that those were designed not necessarily to satisfy any particular individual work group members. I think, at least in my mind, and I think the others, our objective was to keep in mind what we thought it might take to get a bill from one chamber through
that chamber to the other
chamber, through that chamber, so that we can have a successful legislative effort, recognizing that that's where some element of compromise would have to be made. And so I think that was the objective of the work group, was to lay out elements of a balanced approach to this that might have the prospect, with the support of work group members, to draw enough votes in the House and Senate to make it through both chambers. That is the call of the judgment of five or six or seven people that worked on this most directly. It's your responsibility, of course, and your prerogative to exercise your own judgment as to what will come out of this committee and, frankly, what its prospects will be in the Senate. We presented to you what I would describe as our best shot at a balance of elements that might address enough issues in the measure to garner support. But it's your bill.
Mr. Chairman, I guess maybe make a comment.
Discussion at this point to have.
You presented a package that came in as a package, and I think your statement is right. It was a package designed, the whole package, to maybe get the votes here and get the votes on the other side. The package is now falling apart. Certainly, Organizations in Action are an important actor, and they've taken two paces out of that package and maybe don't support any of it for all we know at the moment. So our job is going to be now, I mean, we have two possibilities here in this group. One is to pick the words out of your Dastri amendments that faithfully implement the existing words of Measure 37 and don't do anything but that are designed exactly to do that. Or we have the opportunity now to start de novo and try and craft a package that says, okay, we'll contract Measure 37 this way, and in return we'll expand Measure 37 this way. And that seems like now you worked on it how many weeks?
Months.
Months? How many months? Now we're in a position of being between now and 3 o'clock Friday afternoon or 9 o'clock Friday night. I mean, whatever the...
If we get the amendments.
Well, I think we'll have the amendments shortly, but whether we do or don't, I mean, I think now we might recognize that the notion of now trying to craft a new spacecraft with the kind of quality control in that spacecraft that's necessary to get it back into this reentry may seem at the moment like a fool's mission, that we may instead really want to do... to really ask which of these pieces of your language and help you tell us are simply ways to implement the existing rules of Measure 37 and which are something that does anything else, expands, contracts, or changes Measure 37 based on, because I'm prepared to look at things that say, okay, let's look at the claims process, you have to have a claims process, and here's some good words for a claims process. That doesn't cause me any trouble. But when we start talking about, should we be taking transferability for protection of prime farmland should begin to negotiate those sort of deals. That seems to me to be a real problem.
Representative Greenwood, when we started this venture, I made the statement that it was this committee's intent to clarify and to only clarify Measure 37. That is still this committee's intent, is only to clarify Measure 37. What this committee anticipated and is now meeting is the give and take required in order to accomplish the clarification.
Well, for example, I see nothing in the words of the Measure 37 amendment that talks anything at all about transferability. So it would seem to me under your intent to clarify the existing words, any discussions of transferability goes beyond clarifying the rules of Measure 37. They may be to clarify the intent of it, but they certainly go, what some people think of the intent, but they certainly go beyond clarifying the words of the measure, since there are no words that talk about transferability.
Well, it's very apparent you and I have separate paths in this respect, and that I believe that people expect us to clarify Measure 37, and transferability has always been on the minds, number one issue, of those group of people that have either filed claims or voted for Measure 37. That's been very clear to me that they want that clarification.
But we received testimony from them that I remember that there was transferability components were put in, and in return for that there were things like Measure 17 and 18 put in, that was a balance in terms of expanding the existing words. And so, I mean, that's more than a clarification when you're saying, okay, we'll give you transferability, which isn't in the words, and we'll take away claims and urban growth boundaries or something beyond a certain date. That's more than a clarification. That's balancing expansions and contractions.
Representative Ackerman.
Well, we've had this debate before, and I think it's a little bit late to change our direction. I view clarification as also supplying obvious omissions, and that's when we get into ideas like transferability. I think that the people must have known, if you want to talk about the intent of the people, that the real omissions or the real areas for necessary clarification, that defaults to the legislature because they did not legislate effectively in the drafting of Measure 37. I think that's beyond a shadow of a doubt. That's why we are here. So it defaults to us to supply the omissions and supply the clarity to make it work as nearly as possible with the intent of the voters. I think that's our mission, and I have no problem at all looking at terms that are not specifically in Measure 37, if there are those that must be resolved for its clarity or to determine its workability.
Representative Nolan?
Mr. Chair.
The committee never weighed in at this point.
I do think that since we are legislators, it's our job both to legislate and to improve, clarify, implement what the voters intended to do, that we have apparently taken off the table the one thing that I think the voters looked at when they voted on this, and subsequent research tells us they expected us to do, which is, going back to the ballot title, governments must pay. We have apparently taken that off the table, so we seem to be saying we are not willing to clarify or implement that part of what the voters intended. If we look at the explanatory statement in the voters' pamphlet, it says that it will cost $18 to $44 million per year to administer
just administer, not even pay claims, but conduct the administration. And we are not budgeting that kind of money at the state level to fulfill what the voters read in the voters' pamphlet and presumably voted on. It says that it will cost in excess of $200 million to administer this bill at the county and local level, and we're not providing the financial resources to the cities and counties to do that. I am not at this point putting that on the table, but I raise it to suggest that we have indeed made choices about what parts of the voters' will we want to implement. And when the chief sponsor of the measure has come before this committee and told us that a transfer of ownership resets the clock on regulation, and his own statement in the voters' pamphlet confirms that, I can't see how it is anything other than an expansion of the measure for us then to go around and say, oh, we need to make these transferable, because even though the chief sponsor has told all the voters in writing and us in testimony that we reset the clock on regulation when the property is transferred, now that's a clarification, and I think that's not a clarification. If that, since this is a statutory measure, it is within our power and perhaps within our responsibility to do that, but I think we need to do it explicitly, acknowledge that we are changing the measure if we make waivers under it transferable, and I think it's reasonable for us, as this rump group has done, to balance some of those puts and takes, as I said. But I think we need to acknowledge publicly what we're doing if we're going to do it.
I think now's as good a time as any to do this, to have this discussion before we begin on dissecting the work of the work group. So this is a discussion that might be uncomfortable, but we need to have. Any other committee members wish to weigh in? That we haven't heard from before. Representative Greenwood.
Mr. Chair, I think if we're going to try and divine the will of the voters, we really do need to go back at the rules of the ballot measure. And, you know, the whole first page is only about compensation. And I don't see anything in here that talks about anything that would allow you to think about transferability, especially when the voters' pamphlet said otherwise. I mean, when the principal sponsor's voter pamphlet statement said the regulatory clock is reset upon the granting of waivers. I mean, where do we get to design the will of the voters that it's anything other than that?
Went through and printed out all of the arguments in favor the other night, and it does appear to me as we look through those that other than the Dolan case and a few others where they were talking we could have saved $1.5 million by just paying this $14,000 up front, many of them, if not most of them, were, I want to use more property the way I want to use my property. So I think it was an idea not so much of compensation, and I believe we heard from Director Shetterly that most of the claims put in so far are for use, not for compensation. That, to me, would tell me what the intent of the people out there that were harmed is all about.
Let's take that one step further. If Measure 37 gave people the right to do with their property as they wished, does not the right to sell the property, is that not implied in Measure 37?
Sure. I don't see anything
in these words that say, nowhere here does it say, I'm going to give property owners the right to do anything they want. It's not in these words.
And it's not in the principal proponent's main argument.
It does give the words that say the right not to apply. That's the second part of the compensation package.
That's right. The right not to apply specific statutes or interpretations.
For that owner.
For that owner. It doesn't say anything about doing anything they want with their property that they could have done when they bought it. It doesn't say anything about having these rights in perpetuity. I mean, there's nothing in the words of this measure that say that, nor is in there in Oregonians and Actions main
statement in favor of it. But take yourself back to 1965. What you could do then meant that you could transfer the property. The property could be transferred continuously. It was only after 1973 that that concept changed.
We are
going back in time.
In 1965, in 1940, in 1925, freehold property and cities and counties did things. And when they did things, we couldn't transfer them based on what happened before they did things. I mean, this concept that we could transfer them based on what we had has never in history happened. I had a house. They zoned the property. I could sell it, but they zoned it, and I sold it based on what regulations were in force at the time. There's never been the notion that I own my property and I have a set of property rights. Cities, counties do something, and I had the property rights I had. Whatever they did, I nullified because those property rights weren't there when I bought the property. That's never in the history of Oregon property law. When things change, they change.
I grant you part of that, but I guess I'd have to lean on the director or possibly Mr. Klein. But it does seem to me that when I owned a home in 65, I was able to sell it, and other people after that were able to sell it. That, to me, is transferability.
But if they passed the... If you bought
it... And it was according to the zoning regulations at the moment.
At the moment.
Yeah.
But that's the point. The point is, when you sold that property, you didn't say to the person that bought it, they're going to forever be able to do with it what you could do with it in 1965.
I'm not saying that now. I'm saying that when they do transfer it, it will be under new laws at that point.
Okay.
Well, I don't have a problem with that. If you're saying, I have some rights now, and I sell it to you, and you can't use it the way I could, it's in force at the time you bought it. I don't know. That's the question that's facing us right now. The question that's facing us right now is, I have some property. I had some rights back in 1970. I claim those rights in 1970. They say, okay, go ahead and do those things. I have the right to do them. I sell you the property. You have the rights to do what could have happened in 1970. You have the rights to do what could happen in 2005. That's the argument of transferability. Am I transferring in perpetuity, forever, something that could have happened in that property because it could have happened when I bought it in 1925? That's what we're talking about here today.
Representative Ackerman.
Yeah, I have a couple of responses, and the first one is to Mitch. If we employ your founder's intent or the voter's intent and you're going to go within the four corners of 37, it's not there, we can't do anything about it, then it seems to me you're inconsistent because your -10 amendment set up another type of ordinance that does not constitute a land use regulation.
I mean, if we were playing a game that was with a whole deck, Bob, and I was willing to play in that game and I was saying, here's some chips I want to throw in for that piece. When we pulled 17 and 18 out, we don't have a whole deck anymore, and I withdraw these because we're not playing that game anymore. We're playing with a stack deck, and I'm not willing to play that game anymore.
Well, I'm not taking a face value.
Furthermore, I don't have to be brilliant and consistent.
I guess you're free license to...
Or either. I don't want to be neither.
One more issue on the issue of transferability, because I think we have ample authority to do that. But we're not buying off, I don't think, on the idea that there's transferability in perpetuity, because the people did not repeal land use regulation when they, all land use regulation, when they adopted Measure 7, or that would have been there and we wouldn't be sitting here. So we have the right to temper some of these omissions, such as transferability, to set conditions as to who may be transferred to and under what conditions and over what particular time period. I think that's the balancing act that the people are asking us to do, because we are the only game in town right now. We can't keep rushing to the ballot to tweak this this measure. This is our legislative responsibility, and I think that the people are asking for some balance in making a radical change in land use regulation and yet wanting to preserve it at the same time.
And I think Section 13 addresses that by not only authorizing the transferability, but putting distinct caps on Representative Greenwich's going on forever. That can't happen. There is a cap there.
No, it doesn't. It goes on forever as long as I don't transfer the property.
Well, I think there's some... there's some notion here that it can transfer, and we'll get to that later. I mean, it can...
But it's two distinct issues, and I believe you're right.
I'm trying to get a balanced approach. I would not want to go that far, but it doesn't mean we don't have the authority or the responsibility to deal with it here and now.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I think we do have the responsibility. This is a statutory amendment, not a constitutional amendment, and we can change it any way we want. But what's triggered my reaction was the statements in yesterday's session, both from the witnesses and from the committee table, that says, oh yeah, we can add that because that's clarifying. No, no, we can't add that because that narrows Measure 37. And the notion that it's okay to expand it in clarification, but it's not okay to narrow it because it wasn't the intention of the voters to narrow it. I'm saying that the discussion that we had before both expanded it and narrowed it. I thought it did both things, and they tried to get a balance. The same thing happened over in the Senate, not successfully, expanding it, narrowing it. I'm saying it seems to me if we're going to really try and have a balanced change of Measure 37, to implement a better version of Measure 37, that would include both expanding it in some places, expanding the words, if you will, in some places, and contracting the words in some places, if it makes sense from a public policy perspective. I don't sense that's what we're going to try and do in the next 2 days. I get a sense that we're going to try and expand it with things like transferability, expand the four corners. Let's talk about that one. But we're not talking about anything that restricts what would be granted under a Measure 37 claim. And I don't see any point in doing that.
You just got 13 body off.
He's going to rear
you. I think it
no, you don't. You love it.
I think it takes courage on behalf of members of this committee to sit here in public and talk about the things that everyone else is talking about, but taking the responsibility to take a position. And I respect that very much. And I respect the fact that we can have this conversation in public. So, despite the fact I disagree with it. Representative
Miller. You have a chair.
I think it's actually healthy for us to raise these issues here. And I continue to believe that there's a reason there are seven of us on this committee and not just one, because we bring seven different perspectives from seven different parts of the state to bear on something that we hope will ultimately be in the best interest of the entire state. That's the reason there are 60 of us in the House and 30 in the Senate. If we all agreed on everything all the time, one of us would be sufficient to do the work that we need to do. I do think we need to think very seriously about this, and I think we need to acknowledge that anything beyond clarifying a claims process, clarifying judicial review, is a change to Measure 37. I won't even attribute it to an expansion or a contraction, but a change. And it is within our purview and indeed our responsibility to make sure that the measure can be implemented effectively and fairly. But if we are not willing to acknowledge that it changes Measure 37, I don't think we'll make progress. We may get a bill out of this committee. We may even get a bill across the floor of the House, but it won't get to the governor's desk. And as I have committed to you for months now, I think it's our responsibility not just to stake out positions, but to try to legislate and put something into law. And we have to acknowledge the pathway to getting it there and moderate our efforts in recognition of that pathway.
Well, I think that Representative Greenblatt, if this committee goes astray and perhaps we just have a difference of semantics in the word clarify or change, whatever that case may be, there are seven of us here. And it is we seven that will make these decisions together, and hopefully together. And I would hope that as we go through this process, you, in particular, will monitor and bring up the question if you feel that we've gone astray or have overextended our boundaries. I would welcome that comment from you at any time in the next 2 days that you feel that's happening. That's not really the intent. Again, we're trying to figure out how do we make Measure 37 work better. Can we do that by clarifying? If we can't, then perhaps we should use the word change instead of clarify. Nobody's hiding behind words. If we're going to change it, we'll change it in order for the bill to be interpreted and to be applied. And certainly when we get to the claims process and judicial review, those are two areas that I think we pretty well have universal agreement on already. And we know that those two areas are going to help our cities and counties and help, forgive me for saying this, Lane, but your agency, not that it needs any help, but... it's going to help our state agency, it's going to help our cities and counties in processing Measure 37 claims, and it will help the people understand and go through a process that they must go through. So I think there is great benefit to, and perhaps the committee would feel most comfortable in moving those two sections that we basically have universal agreement on, move those forward at this point. Mm-hmm. But let's begin the process of getting it done. We're going to have a debate on transferability, whether it's here, whether it's in the Senate, or whatever. That's certainly the difference in the two political views at this point is it there or isn't it there? And if it isn't there, one side wants to put it there. And the other side says, no, don't just leave it alone, and we'll let the courts decide. And that's basically where we are in this thing.
Sure, I want to thank you for the kind words. You know from the beginning, we've talked since before the session started about how important it is to make Measure 37 work. And
yes.
I'm very much committed to that. And I think there also is a third thing. Okay, we put transferability in, and here's what we take out. I mean, to try and find a balance, that's another political decision that I think they did try and make in the Senate, and they may have not come to the right balance on that. And I haven't seen the new 1037. I don't know whether we even try it.
I would like very much for this committee to be able to put politics aside, and let's do what's right for the people of Oregon.
Absolutely.
That's what we're here for. And that's what Representative Ackerman was getting to. It is our responsibility because we represent the people. And I believe we've received a message from the people, clarify this darn thing. Clear it up for us so that everybody kind of gets on a better track and knows what. If we don't settle the transferability issue, it will be decided in the courts. And heck, there's already people in this room that have figured out ways around it, and there will be. Our people in the financial world are creative enough, So you're right in that respect. If you don't change it, they'll either find a way around it or the courts will decide. But I also buy Representative Ackerman's comment that it is our responsibility. It is not Director Shetterly's, Mr. Klein. This is ours. And right now it comes down on this side to this committee. And we can go through that process constructively, or we can go through it arguing and debating every single thing we do, but we'll never get it done if we do that. And let's not kid ourselves. It's very important that the majority of this committee be in favor of what we produce. If we have a 4-3 vote out of this committee going to the House floor, we're all well aware we can get it passed in the House, but it ain't going to fly on the other side of the building. We've got to have more. We've got to have this committee as much in agreement as possible. And I will, as your chair, work to find that as we go through this process. But I'm about ready to take this coat off because it's really getting warm in here all of a sudden. And Connie, this is all your fault. If you had the amendments here, we wouldn't have gotten into them.
My apologies, sir.
Thank you for that. Mr. Connerly, we needed to have this conversation.
We go back on the floor at 3. So I think and we still do not have the amendments. I think it would be difficult to start anything this late time.
Is there any controversy at all on the claims and on the issue review process?
I don't.
I think you're right.
I don't believe there is.
The first order of business that
Harrison said yesterday was to move the threes into 3120 rather than the ones, to extract the ones and move the threes in, and then we could be actually amending the threes. Am I with you,
Mr. Chair? When we draft the amendments, we draft to the printed bill. So the printed bill at this point is HB 3120. Everything I have drafted is drafted to the printed bill.
Okay.
Yes. But let me say also, I got this little update. You know, I tried actually when I started to say I thought these amendments would be here before the end of the meeting. And I'm not quite sure that was what I heard, and it seemed like everybody was waiting with bated breath for the update was to say that it would be at least 3 or 3:30 before we should expect it.
Thank you for that clarification.
That's a change, Mr.
You're right.
Mr. Chair, members, I don't think it's a change in what I said, but, you know, sometimes in translation.
Here it is.
We're going to lose Representative Nolan here in a second. She has a meeting coming up, so I think that... it's somewhat disappointing that we were not able to begin today, but I think it wiser to wait till tomorrow, and we'll start tomorrow morning and hopefully have those amendments at 8:30. And
Mr. Chair,
Representative Smith,
I'm waiting on this very much. I slipped out of the room when you were starting your discussion, but
we thought maybe you wanted to put cougars in your.
I thought maybe we should. Could maybe get some traction on that. I just wanted to reiterate to the committee how appreciative I've been of all the hard work everyone has put into this. And this is huge. We went from a simple little ballot title to this. This is, you know, 1 week's worth of work, and it's a tremendous amount of work and pressure for all of us. But my responsibility has been to my voters, and I've heard from many of them. I not only have the National Scenic Area, which is now got a ruling that the Gorge Commission is not affected by the Measure 37. I have lots of landowners who have filed Measure 37 claims who are very worried about the impacts we'll have on those claims. So I think there's a lot to be said for implementing the will of the voter, but I take very seriously the impact of what we're doing here. So I just wanted to thank everyone for all their hard work.
Thank you.
had to do with Senate Bill 887, which they're holding over till tomorrow. So, all right, we'll start at 8:30 in the morning. Hopefully, have the Dash 11s, and we'll begin our journey at that time. I thank all of you for being here, and I hope you will be back for the show tomorrow. So, the House Committee on Land Use is adjourned.